Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
We have a gentleman in the house from Waterloo region of Canada, near Wilmot. He's a spokesman for Fight for a Farmland. His name is Alfred Lowrick, and they have seriously had some problems there about their region and local authorities, as we call them in New Zealand, trying to expropriate the farmland. Alfred, can you fill us in? Fill us in the gaps. This has been bubbling away for some months. We first saw you, peat farmers in your areas, being very concerned that crops that were being grown on farmland, then the local authorities or the councils tried to take them off or may have bought them, and they just decimated the crops that were already growing without even taking them to productive harvest. Anyway, fill us in the gaps, because I'm sure there's plenty.
Well, thank you, Don. It is fact, but that's the end, almost the end of the story where we're at right now. This project for the region started 6 months ago in March. We had a knock on the door and someone wanting to buy our land. I represent my one of the farmers, and there are, and so one of the holdings themselves, one of the six farms, and there are six farms and also six residential properties that the region of Waterloo is trying to assimilate or to accumulate, so they would put an industrial site on it. And that's all we've been told at that point. And there's really not much more than that we know. We don't, at this point, we don't know what the plans are for the site, but it's significant size, 770 acres, or what's that, about 325 hectare, that is in play here. 8.5 kilometers around. So we've been spending the first 6 months now making our community aware of what the issues are, what we have found, why we don't necessarily think this is an appropriate use of this land. There's a lot of disruption that this is going to cause. We sit outside of the region. The region of Waterloo is made up of three cities, Kitchener, Waterloo, and Cambridge. And that was supposed to be in our regional official plan as the housing for this region. The industrial properties would be to the east, and that's where our airplane is, and airport is. And a lot of the industry that is in the community. Wilmot is the township that I live in, and where this land is being assembled is primarily agricultural. And it is zoned that way. It's what we call the countryside line that was drawn through the official plan, and that keeps those three segments I just mentioned separate. So the townships in our region are all designated for agricultural, and there's a number of things that go into that. It's not just the agricultural aspect, but the drawing of where water comes from, the promise of how things are managed, etc. So a couple of things that are unique in Kitchener-Waterloo, or in the region of Waterloo, I should say, is that we're landlocked. We're in the middle of a lot of big lakes, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie, Lake Huron, all around us. So we certainly aren't landlocked from a perspective. It takes us an hour to get to one of those lakes, but we draw our water primarily from the ground. We have large aquifers that flow through the area through Wilmot, and a number of large rivers, the Grand River and the Nith River, and primarily the ones that we focus on here, that are the carry a lot of the water away into the Great Lakes. But the water is drawn from these from wells that are in the aquifer, and it supplies all the water into the region. So we're very concerned with this acquisition, making this industrial land, and not really understanding what it's all about, and what's going in there, and how that could impact the water system, which is only 300 meters away. The east side of this property is would only be 300 meters away from wells that are pumping in the neighborhood of, you know, over 1,500 liters per second, and gives you an idea how much that's flowing through. That's just the one well, and but it's all through Wilmot that where this water is being drawn from and treated and being brought into the households around the community. So that's the water side. You know, there's a sewage issue that we have to concern ourselves with, and so on. And so the impact on our community is fairly significant. You know, obviously it's an agricultural community that has grown up that way, and the land has always been zoned that way, and it has kept the speculators away from the area, because there's no way you cross that countryside line where you have industry on one side and across the street zoned agriculture, and you don't see the lift that you see in many cases of prices. Anyway, so that there's a whole bunch of factors, but I'm just mentioning with you.
So the one thing that at the outset we should query is, there's no shortage of land in Canada. I'm sure there's plenty of land that's available for industrial use or community use if they need to expand an urban development or something. Why do you think that your highly productive land has been sought in this instance? I mean, it's near a main highway, I think, and it's near some other interesting environmental sort of, or, you know, some useful aspects of the infrastructure. But why do you think the authorities want to land bank as much as they do and as quickly as they do, and without sort of letting you know why?
That's a good question. Our group constantly wonders what the issues are behind this. And it only can come down to the growth, the exponential growth in this province. Our federal government has opened the doors. Immigration is significant into primarily Ontario and Quebec, and those people have to be housed and they have to have work. And when you start looking at, if you ever drive through Toronto, it can take you an hour. It can take you 3 hours. It is one of the busiest cities in the world, and every time you go down there is another tower. So I think what they've come to realize is Toronto is at its capacity. Going north is there's a lot of industry that's already been built. Alliston with the Honda plants are up there, and to the east is other cities. So they probably looked at this and said, the only way we can expand in the community and into Ontario would be to go west, and that would be into Kitchener and beyond. So they probably looked at the infrastructure, looking at highways, rail. They looked at this land being fairly flat, even though there's some... It will take some effort to level this out. And the hydro infrastructure, hydroelectrical infrastructure, is running right through it. So I can only imagine that some of those key priorities key assets were looked at as favorable in this area. In the highway infrastructure, it's a four-lane highway that stops basically right at this light, right at this property. Hydro, like I said, hydro corridor, the electrical corridor goes right to it. So those would tend to be where some large industry should develop. And they probably looked at that and said, okay, we will go here. I don't think looking at all the other parameters that are looking at that make this either good or bad. I don't think they've done enough work.
Alfred, I think I'll let our listeners know your website. This is www.fightforfarmland.com. And I'm reading the statistics put up there, which say that Canada's landmass offers just 6% of land suitable for farming, with a mere 4% designated for crop cultivation. Remarkably, the most fertile portion of this 4% lies within Wilmot Township. For me, it would seem a no-brainer to, you know, leave this as it is. But it's astounding. It began in March. We are now in September. You've also had a big rally towards the end of August at your regional council. You cannot say with any degree of certainty, can you, that what is going to eventuate? What are the plans for this area? Can you?
Yeah, we don't have any idea what is going to happen here yet. Like I said earlier, we've gone through an exercise of ensuring that people know about it. So Wilmot Township has its governing authorities, a mayor and a council. They were fully aware of what was going on here. And then we have a regional council that is also very aware of what our protests are. As you indicated, last Wednesday, we had a rally at our regional headquarters. So to give you some idea what that was, we had almost 50 tractors that left the land in Wilmot, traveled into the downtown core of Kitchener. And we held a rally in right in front of the regional administrative building. So we're talking a rural, right from farms, right to the core of a city, a city that has probably 500,000 people. So it's not a small city by any stretch of the imagination. It's not a not huge like Toronto, but it is large. And again, that's one part. And remember, I mentioned there are three cities. And
yes. Someone within your councils or your local government, regional government, someone must be knowing what the plans are when you begin expropriating land or, say, even begin negotiations to, buy this from farmers. Someone must know what the plan is. And yet you guys are being kept in the dark.
I think a lot of people are kept in the dark. We've had some very open discussions with our local mayor and councillors and even regional councillors. And I don't think no one is admitting that they have any idea that this is what's going in here. We just found out a couple weeks ago that our provincial government is funding this, which we always knew, and it had to come from, the money had to come from somewhere. You follow the money.
Yep.
So money is coming from the province, and who knows if the federal government's involved with this as well. But the money is coming from, they finally admitted they're funding the project. How much they're directing this project to be determined. So all I can imagine is that the provincial government here is directing funding this, and there are some developers that are happy to get their hands on this property to develop it properly or develop it to their specs.
To expectations. And just like you, just like us, you guys have had a massive immigration into Canada during the last few years. I see just from January 23 to January 24, it's 1.25 million, roughly, that the numbers have increased. Of course, your population is 40 million. We are about 5.25 million now, but one can see possibly where the pressure is coming from. But I also note that around December of 2021, right around, when there's a holiday period, the Township of Wilmot had then announced a special council meeting for a ministry to support a ministerial zoning order into the Wilmot Township. And that time they had wanted to push these plans of building 1,200 residential homes in that area. So it's Smart Growth Wilmot is a website I found very interesting. And you can see where these plans are coming from, but it remains to be seen where this goes.
Yeah, that's a unique feature of the provincial government doing an MZO, municipal zoning order. So in essence, it supersedes the zoning official plan of the region. So I was mentioned the region has an official plan where all the areas are designated. and MZO supersedes that. And in New Hamburg, a number of years ago, yes, in 21, there was an MZO looking at putting a housing development in there, and that never happened to the extent that there was a significant pushback. And I think they started to look at some of the other infrastructure issues that would come into play here, in particular the sewage issues. That sewage treatment plant would be at its capacity, and the Mith River, which flows through that, would be at the assimilative capacity as well. So those things probably limited the growth at that point in time.
So when earlier this year the Viva developments came from, it's Kitchener based, a city to your west, I think you said, with offers to purchase the land, all landowners refused, but then a consultancy company was hired, and all of a sudden it was called Kanaka, and it seemed to be that they were then the middleman to do the deal. Is that how it's read?
You got it. It was interesting. It was in January that a company, development company, knocked on the door of three of the farmers, offering them, a substantial amount of money for their properties. Not that substantial, but enough that thought that was going to be enough to purchase it. And the interesting part was this company, and it was Vive Developments, had no history of land banking. They just all of a sudden did this. So those are issues that we're going to deal with in the next phase of this this project if it goes any further. But failing that, the region then started the exercise to bring Canacre in as the hired gun to make this deal happen. And they're still around. There are a number of people in with Canacre that went and saw all the farmers, and are still in contact through our lawyers at this point in time. But they're still around, and they're still trying to negotiate a price that they think they can get for the land, and basing it off of agricultural property land versus what it's going to become. So just as the sake of a comparison, agricultural land goes for around $40,000 an acre, $40,000 to $50,000 an acre in this community. If it's industrial land, and kitty corner from this, serviced industrial land goes for $1 million to $1.5 million an acre. So big difference. Now, one's agriculture, one hasn't been zoned, one hasn't been developed yet. But if you want to look at apples to apples, you're looking at maybe, $1 million an acre versus 50,000 acres. So they're willing to pay the farmers 50,000 and then turning it over to some commercial enterprise and have that land worth $1 million an acre. It's not fair.
So the issue is money does talk, and farmers do sell out. I assume you have what's called freehold title. Over here we call it freehold title, or you have title. And in the end, money does talk, and it's a matter of negotiating to get that right amount. And of course, then the Bush Telegraph works, and he got that, but I didn't, and I'm just over the boundary. So it's hard. Are you finding that the farmers are united, or is there splinters? Is there a split with people that have already settled or are about to settle? I mean, I've seen this before. You just get one to move away, and all of a sudden the deck of cards falls.
Yeah, and it's exactly the modus operandi of Canacre at this point, divide and conquer. And initially we had six farms and six residential sites. So residential properties varied in size from 1 acre to 4 acres, 25 acres. And so 25 acres was considered a farm. So anyway, six smaller sites, six farms. One of the farmers sold early, and that's where the land was harvested early. So he sold his 160 acres, had a corn crop planted, and then Canacre got into the deal, purchased the land, at least conditionally so, bought the land and to do their testing, and took the crop down. So it was 160 acres of corn crop, probably within, you know, 5-6 weeks of being valuable property, or a valuable feed, I should say.
Feed.
Yeah. And then, you know, it'll be October, November before that harvest, the corn crop would have been suitable for other purposes, cornmeal, et cetera, for human consumption. So those things would all have all went away. And you saw the video where 160 yeah. acres was harvested and kind of blown onto the fields and plowed in there under. And so it's a big concern from an environmental standpoint, one thing, doing all that. But it's really, when there's a lot of food insecurity that all through the world, this happens. And we did some calculations that you have cornflakes down there, I would hope.
Yes, you do. No, you do.
Okay. So the cornflakes, we equated that 160 acres to 2.5 million boxes of cornflakes that was destroyed. So we had some of our agricultural guys that are sitting on our team do that calculation and what the costs were and everything else. So that's pretty accurate. And I'm a little stunned by that. And we've done some food drives as an awareness, bringing people bringing cornflakes or corn. Yeah. Cereal to our rallies, so it kind of brings that focus back to it.
Yeah, Alfred, I think what's one thing I'm really interested in knowing, how's farming actually doing right now in your province? So you can't speak for whole of Canada, because out here what I'm looking is, especially in the dry stock region, that's a non-milking, it is not profitable anymore. So we see farmers here in New Zealand for whom, if they could, you know, end the year with at a net zero, not going to a loss, it's considered a good result. We have seen double-digit drops in profitability in New Zealand, especially for the dry stock farmers that I refer to, who are folding at a rapid rate, and I don't blame them. It's rough out there. They've seen drops of 30 to 40% annualized over the last couple of years. It would ultimately, what's going to come down to, I think, is, are farmers able to make a fair living out of that land, or is it more profitable now to just get rid of it and say, closed book, closed chapter?
Yeah, it comes down to who you talk to. There are some people that aren't I'll call it farmers that aren't as good at their trade as others. However, in general, and you know, you'd have to talk to our some of our team members that are in the Federation of Agriculture here, Ontario Federation of Agriculture is one of our team members, but he has indicated that this area in particular, Wilmot Township, has the highest income of any farm property in all of Ontario and all of Canada, except for an area that's south of us that has primarily a lot of greenhouses, and so their receipts are higher. The products that are produced in Ontario, in our small area between the Great Lakes, can grow a greater variety of product of food and fruit and vegetables than anywhere else in Canada and anywhere else in North America, except for California, which has to use irrigation to produce its products. So we're in a really nice area here. We constantly get regular rain. Our soil is great. So it drives us a little, from an agricultural environmental perspective, it drives us crazy that they're going to pave this over, because once this is paved over, it's done. It'll not ever be used again for agriculture.
I think in New Zealand we've had this, we call it urban encroachment, where, you know, the urbanization of the country and the expansion of the population really has emanated or spread out from especially the bigger cities. And of course there was very nice agricultural or horticultural land put under your houses on top of them. And it's a constant argument. Where is the tension between urban encroachment and that zoning? When does it stop? going out further. Now, if you're the farmer on the edge of a city boundary and you're the next farm over and you've seen your former neighbour and former good mate sell out to a big developer, and all of a sudden the rule book says you can't take the same checkbook into your property, there gets this to be this tension. So in the end, and I'm playing the devil's advocate here a bit, Alfred, is farmland so desired that society should pay a hell of a lot more to keep it in farmland than they do? Because effectively, if they did, they would have to pay a lot more for their food, is my thinking on it. And they don't. They want cheaper food.
Absolutely. And it comes down to how demand supply networks, how people value things and what they're willing to pay and what the demand is for products. So our concern is that if this continues, we're not going to see production or food production that's going to be able to feed the people around the world, let alone here in Ontario and in your area in New Zealand. So I'm concerned from an environmental perspective. I don't think it's going to impact me at my advanced age, but it'll impact my children, my grandchildren, and that's what that's kind of brought me to the table here, and why I'm helping the farmers and the local community deal with this issue.
Yeah, well, look, it's great that you're standing up, and I think that's what we do when we get a bit older, actually. And you're an activist when you're younger, but when you're older, you like to think that you can have your experience count in your community. And I think that's where I am. Whether they take notice of it is a different matter. But, I think it's great to have you on RCR's Greenwashed, Alfred. I just remind your listeners that it's www.fightforfarmland.com. And you can find a bit more about what's going on in Ontario, especially in the Wilmot and the Waterloo region, and keep up with what Alfred and this group are doing. So, Alfred, we loved having you on our show, and we may try to get you back for an update in the months ahead, because this won't just impact your community, or doesn't. It's happening around the world, but your one has become very public. And, it was great of Jasprit to find the link and to get us to where we are today, and great to have you on our show. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Alfred. We're really grateful you could make the time.
Oh, thank you. And when we do this again, I'll have some other people part of our group that can be part and parcel of it, that can maybe provide some other insights. I'm just a spokesperson, but there's other really bright, capable people on our team that are able to crystallize some of the conversations a bit more.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.